fluent in my language, and that is one of the greatest embarrassments of my life. But we'll be talking with some of my guests about that in the episodes coming up. There are 5 major dialects in Cree, with many micro-dialects that come from different landscapes and Cree communities. We're going to talk about those differences and similarities and where in Canada they are. But now I want to introduce you to my first guest, Grand Chief Garrison Satie of the Manitoba Kiwatinohyoga-Mackinac, or MKO. Garrison is a great guy, and he's not just a political leader, he's also a former educator and an amazing musician and singer who puts on a great classic rock show. Another disclosure, I used to work at MKO, but before Garrison became Grand Chief. The MKO represents just over 24 First Nations in northern Manitoba. I caught up with Garrison at the offices of the Manitoba Kiwatinohyoga-Mackinac. Kansei, how you doing?
Good.
Good, good. I'm here to see the Grand Chief. I might be a little early.
I don't think he's here. Or is he here? Grand Chief here? Okay. Naomi, is it Michael? Yes, you can hang with.
I heard his voice.
Okay,
yeah, I recognized his voice.
All right.
Good to see you, Grand Chief.
Oh, thanks.
I always love your hugs.
Niminitin, ewap mitaguk petlataguk bicheto. Naspesi mininitin eganinitamanista ni pigiskuin egipegiskinomaga wyan wasisiyan. Agan mininitin petaman yatsimuina. I just said that I'm very happy that I speak my language, and I was taught the Cree language when I was, very young, of course. My parents spoke Cree, and my siblings and I speak Cree to each other all the time because that's the language we were raised in, and it's the language I'm most comfortable with.
Okay.
And when I speak in Cree, I speak from my heart. Because when I speak in English, which is my second language, I have to do this thing in my head, right? Try to make that translation from what I understand in Cree into English. And sometimes it's a challenge to do that, because sometimes what you say in English doesn't really make sense, or it sometimes sounds funny.
Yeah. What dialect do you speak?
I'm Swampy Cree.
The best Cree.
The best Cree. Yes.
What are the other dialects in Cree?
Well, there's the Plains Cree.
Yeah.
And there's the Mistissini Cree. And then there's a Rock Cree. And
Woodland?
Woodland Cree, yes. Broche, Nelson House.
Yeah. And then out in Quebec, I think it's Atikamekw Cree.
Atikamekw Cree, Mistissini Cree, there's James Bay Cree.
Yeah, so there's about 5 different, big dialects.
Yeah.
But then there's also each community can have little differences
Absolutely.
In how they speak.
Especially in my community of Timisoara, the north end and the south end have their own dialects.
You're kidding.
The sound, the intonation is different. And you can tell which part of town somebody's from when they speak Cree. Yeah, especially when we were younger. And there was a little bit of a rivalry, who's right and who's wrong and how they say things. And same thing with our neighbors.
Yeah.
Norway House, it's a lot of different ways they say things. And even the accent is very different. So it's the accents in the dialect that makes it very different.
Yeah.
But, I used to teach Cree at one time in Cranberry Portage.
You've been a teacher for a long time.
Yeah, I was a teacher for many years.
Yeah.
And I had to teach Cree at Frontier School Division in Cranberry Portage. They've never had a Cree program there before. I was the one that taught it for the first time when I was working there. And I can honestly say that I thought I knew my Cree, because when you start doing the research and also how thinking of how to say things, it made it very, I learned more.
Okay.
And my grandfather never spoke a word of English in his life. So I benefited from that exchange with him when I was growing up. And I would have to learn how to say things in a way that he would understand them. So that gave me the ability to be more conversant with my language, and also learning the formal way of saying things as opposed to just everyday terminology.
There's sort of like a new Cree and an old Cree, almost like there's New English and Elizabethan English.
Absolutely, like there's the old Cree. They call it the old Cree or High Cree. Some people call it High Cree, but the old Crees, where the language is so rich that they don't take shortcuts in the pronunciation. It's like consonant vowel. For example, when I say Tansi, our people say Tanise, Tanise. They don't say Tansi.
Yeah.
So that's the old way of speaking. And instead, when I say no much, but the old people, my grandfather would say na much.
Mm.
So they didn't shorten these words. But now there's a breakdown in some of the words, and it become less formal, and the people have lost the old ways of saying things. And that's because of the contact we have with the outside world. We started utilizing words and combining them into Korean English at the same time. Like, for example, when you say bread, people say baret. Baret, but it's an English word. They Kreeify it, right?
Yeah.
Or if they say skulik at the school, then school is an English word combined with the Cree.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
Betsy,
like that, eh? Yeah. And also there's also the and the people call it Kringlish, right?
Okay.
Because of their contact with the outside, people become more inclined to speak both languages at the same time. But I'm fortunate that I'm around people that are very fluent.
Mm.
And my grandfather's spoke very high Cree, and I was fortunate enough to be exposed to that. And I still value, and I'm still learning to this day. I sometimes phone up people that I know that have a command of the language. The language keepers that we have are so few, but they're still out there, and they're still teaching.
Yeah.
And I think that more than ever, we need to hold them in high regard because of the preservation of the language, because of the young people losing the language and not learning it. We're in danger of losing the language in our communities because it's happening. When I went back to teach in my First Nation, Pimichigamak, I was surprised when I was outside in the playground. I would see the kids still and hear the kids still speaking to Cree, in Cree, to each other, sorry. And then that 20 years later, you don't hear that much Cree.
Well, there's an idea in Cree, it sort of goes through the whole language, the idea of inanimate and animate. Can you explain that?
Well, I think that, as indigenous people, everything has a spirit. That's why sometimes you call inanimate things as if though they were living, like a rock.
Yeah.
You speak to it like it's a living thing. It's not something that's not alive. And in our culture, of course, everything has a spirit, right?
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of people in the outside of our culture don't see it like that. Everything is strictly black and white. For us, these objects or things have life. And they have a spirit. That's why you can call them as if they were a living being, as animate.
Yeah. Well, and so it's like French, where in French, everything is split up into male and female, masculine, feminine. In Cree, everything is split up into that which has spirit and that which does not have spirit.
Absolutely. That is the difference.
Yeah. And does it create a philosophy, do you think?
Absolutely. And it's embedded in our, blood memory, right? It's something that we carry with us. And those of us that speak our language, there's things we say without really thinking about it, but we're actually promoting that philosophy because it's ingrained in us, and our parents and our grandparents spoke to these things, and nothing was written down.
Yeah.
Like the Cree that I learned was never from a textbook. It was never in a course. It was never in a classroom. It's just hearing it and being spoken to in that language from ever since you were an infant. Mm-hmm. And even in your mother's womb,
yeah,
you heard reverberations of this language, and even some of the songs that you heard in our language.
Yeah.
So it's something that you are exposed to, and you're conditioned in that language in such a powerful way. And then I say things and speak things as if I knew beforehand what I'm going to say, but yet I don't, yet it comes out, right?
Yeah.
And it's an amazing language because it's a spiritual language.
Yeah.
It is a spiritual language. Language is a spiritual, Cree is a spiritual language along with all the other indigenous languages.
Why do you think Cree parents today aren't teaching their kids Cree?
I think because, number one, they don't have contact with their child as much as our parents did, because most of the parents, mothers, would stay at home and be working at home, and they would have that contact with their children.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they would speak to them in Cree. But nowadays, most parents, because of, you know, challenges of the economic situation, they have to work, both parents have to work. So the child is at school.
Yeah.
And especially technology, movies, music, it's all in English. And that's what they're exposed to.
Yeah.
And I think that parents really have to push themselves to make sure that their language is being passed on to their children. And even the grandparents don't communicate, or the kids don't communicate with the grandparents as much as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Like for us, everybody, our aunties and uncles lived around us in the same area. Our grandparents would be there. So everybody spoke the language all around you, and you had no choice but to learn. And you spoke it. And but nowadays, there's so much family. The family dynamics have changed. Even on the reserve, people don't live together anymore. Relatives don't live in the same neighborhood, but they're scattered because of the way housing is mm-hmm. allocated. And it's all over, and then because of...
Interesting, I never thought of that.
Yeah, and then because of shortage of housing, they'll go anywhere just to get a house. And even if it's an area that their family has never lived, like there's a connection to which part of the community you lived in at when I was growing up, but now there's no real connection.
It's just
everybody goes everywhere. So I think that impacted the language.
Yeah. Well, and aunties and uncles, you know, and grandparents were so crucial to raising the children, to disciplining the child, you know, in comparison to, say, the nuclear family in what many people are living today.
Yeah, like, you know, it's it was normal for my uncles to get after me if I were doing something wrong or saying something wrong. And it was normal for us to get reprimanded by our aunties, and if we're doing things that were probably causing... making trouble with different people. I mean, I think that the family responsibility, I mean, the whole family responsible for their children, not just their own, but their nieces and nephews, is a role that they fulfilled.
Yeah. Well, like we mentioned earlier, you are an educator. So what are some of the problems with, you know, nowadays there's a lot of parents that are, I don't want to downplay the importance of educators or people, you know, working to have Cree in the schools, but it is different than learning at home. So what are some of the challenges those educators are facing starting kids in kindergarten rather than right from birth?
I think because we're using a Western approach to try to teach the language. We're using a Westernized methodology to try to promote the language. And I think it has, to some extent, some impact. But an elder... took me aside one day and he says, it's good what you're doing in the school with the language, it's good. I just wanted to say that that's not how we were taught.
Mm-hmm.
It says, we were taken out on the land and we were taken out to do things, trap, hunt, fish, camp. And that's where you heard the language instruction.
Yeah.
Basic commands like, api, sit down. Hastam.
Yeah.
Birute, come. And then that's how we learned, eh? Uta astanima, put that over there. So you, by action, right? And then I think that what I'm getting at is land-based and also immersion are one of those things that are the most appropriate way of teaching our language, land-based, because you're working with the land, on the land, and you're immersed in language where an elder that may not speak English, you're with there and you're forced to learn just how to respond and say things.
Yeah.
And then that's why we don't really have I don't think your attention in the schools is really that much because, and I've said this before in the language conference, kids will do anything just to get that credit, to get it out of the way.
Mm.
They don't have an appreciation of what they learned. They just want that credit. Okay, I'm done with this.
Okay.
So what I need to do to graduate? Okay, next is other courses, but so it's not treated as something that is cultural. It's an academic. Mm. It's an academic thing. It's something that's just forced on you.
Yeah, where like you mentioned, going out on the land, like new experience with those new experiences, say hunting versus trapping, or trapping versus fishing or picking berries. You'd be doing new stuff, and so you would have to learn new words. You'd be engaging with new plants, new animals, and so you would have to learn new stuff.
Yep, and then that's when you start to ask, what is this? Right, Kegonuma. And then you'd get the answer from the elder, right? Kegonuma. And then you're also thinking, what are these? Okay, and there's different kinds of trees, there's different kinds of birds, there's different kinds of plants and flowers. So you start asking, what are those things, right?
Yeah.
And then you're there, and you can smell the flower, you can feel the flower, touch the flower. That's what makes it more effective, because you're there on the land. You're not just looking at it in a black and white picture.
Yeah.
You don't really have the full understanding of that word, what it means. Because it's in a book, but then when you see it, you feel it, and you smell it, and even taste it, the berries, right? It's alive.
With all this in mind, what would you like to see in the future? Like, to you, what does a healthy Cree language look like?
I think that it should be a normal practice for families. It starts with the family. The families have to commit to teach their children the language. They have to
commit themselves.
Yeah, value. And I have one of my brothers talks to their grandson in Cree only. And I've seen videos of them. They just speak in Cree, and the little child understands and does what he's told in Cree. And I'm thinking, there is hope for this generation. There is hope for that language to still be passed on, and the little kid will run to the fridge and get that, and then he asks to open that lid. He does it, and then kipa, and he closes it, and then on the nasta, and he does that. I think it was 1.5 years old.
Mm.
Already listening to those, because he's in an environment where he hears it and listens to it and acts upon it. And that's the thing, is creating an environment in the home. And I had I read an article in Maclean magazine some years back where the former Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau, in his home, there's three levels, but on that one floor, only French is spoken.
Mm.
And a designated area, only French is spoken. And I'm thinking of that in my own way of what if the schools, this is a designated area for Cree speaking only. And if you're going to be here, you only speak Cree. That will, I think that exercise, I think will students will be they will be more, I guess, susceptible to learn and hear the language in those environments. And we have to create those spaces and environments for people. And I think that people that speak the language need to speak it more. Like even my my colleagues, I know they speak Cree. I speak Cree. But because we're in a professional environment, we speak to each other in English. And I think that we need to make an effort to just speak Cree whenever we can. And I think that's a healthy way of preserving the language and also promoting the language. And I think preserving and promoting are two things that we need to do. And having spaces where only Cree is spoken, that's what we need to do in workplaces, especially with an indigenous organization. Yeah. Ojibwe here, Cree here, Dakota here, yeah. Ojibwe here.
So, you know, how does it make you feel when you see a young person like your nephew there speaking Cree?
I feel very emotional. I feel very proud. It just does something to me inside when I see that a child that young understands the language spoken to him. It's sort of like a healing that's taking place. It's a healing because our languages have been assaulted and our languages have been banned and but yet to see that it's still alive, it's just inspiring.
Now, in each episode, we're going to take some time to learn a few words in Cree. I asked Grand Chief Garrison to teach me some cool concepts or words in Cree, so let's hear what he's got to teach.
Okay, one thing is to promote self-esteem, right?
Okay.
That was like, kimino na bewin.
Kimino mo.
Ke.
Minno. Minno.
Na bewin.
Na bewin.
You're a good man. And I say that from my heart because I'm recognizing who you are and I'm saying it in my language. Kimino na bewin.
Kinim.
Minno.
Kin.
Ke.
Minno.
Na bewin. Na bew is man.
Okay.
Kimino na bewin. You are a good man.
Excellent.
Aga kisaki hitin. Kisaki hitin.
Kisaki hitin.
I love you or I care for you.
Excellent.
Those are very important words to affirm.
Yeah.
And kikisken itaman. Kikisken.
Kikisken.
Itaman.
Itaman. Kikisken itaman.
You are a smart person.
Okay.
So I'm, speaking things that are true in your life, but you need to hear them.
Well, I appreciate you telling that to me because not too many people do.
Yeah, and that's true. We need to celebrate people's characters and gifts and honor those gifts.
Okay. Well, just to wrap up here too, on every episode we're going to play a song. Do you have a favorite Cree song?
There's a few Cree songs I know. Winston Watini sings a song called Nenestosin. Nenestosin, Nenestosin, Kono, Kono, Tekiwean, Nenestosin, Wahaya, Haya, Haya, Wahaya, Haya, Haya.
Excellent. Well, we'll see if we can find that or we can get Winston to do it for us.
Absolutely.
And, we'll make sure we'll play.
That'd be cool.
Okay, well, I want to say goodbye. I want to thank you for all that you've done, for the teachings that you've given, from the compliments you've given me as well. Mm-hmm. And is there anything you wanted to say to wrap up?
Ayupogo, Nenueta, Neskugaskita, let's speak Cree. Any chance we have to speak Cree, promote it. I always start off in Cree whenever I address any crowd, because that's my language, and I'm proud of it, and I promote it, and we just have to encourage one another. Nehinuetan, let's speak Cree.
So that was my conversation with Garrison Satie, the Grand Chief of the Manitoba Kiwatinohi Ogamakanak. During our chat, Garrison sang a bit of a song by Cree musician Winston Watney. I caught up with Winston recently and asked if he would play Kayas Neheyo.
Kaios neio kipa pampitu. Ike eme weta kimano ku. Kayas kimi wasen aski iki ulti pi machi ho pasqua musto sua hai 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 yan says hi 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 Pompidou Hi, hi, hi. Yanne hi asir. Hi, hi, hi.
I spent a fun afternoon recording that song with Winston Whatney. Winston is from the Red Pheasant First Nation in Saskatchewan. He has spent over 40 years educating Canadians about First Nations people. Before I go, let's do a few simple words in Cree. Tansé, this is a greeting. It means, how you doing? But we use it to say hello. Another word is astum, which means come here. We hope you'll return to listen to the next episode. And finally, écossé, which means it is so, or that's it. We use it in place of thank you. And for you, écossé for listening to Words and Culture. You can learn more Cree at wordsandculture.ca, where you can also check out other Indigenous languages as well. I'm your host, Michael Hutchinson. Be well, stay smiling.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi. Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e. Ninen yuji hina.
Ekose.
Kakuhutau. We'll see you again.
My name is William, and you're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Uniquely curated programming by our host maintains an independent voice among the masses. You keep CJSF independent.
And now for a CJSF Heritage Minute. During the 80s and the 90s, CJSF would come into its own as a serious platform for independent artists and a forum for people to express ideas not present in the mainstream media. Summer 2002. CJSF receives a license from the Canadian Radio Telecommunications Commission to broadcast over the FM airwaves. February 13th, 2003, 7 p.m. CJSF goes on air at 90.1 FM. and we've been changing the sound of radio in Burnaby ever since.